PCEA, it's an international network of engineers, designers, fabricators, assemblers. I don't want to forget them. Really anyone who is involved in printed circuit development. And we promote printed circuit engineering as a profession. So, you know, it sounds simple, obviously, in theory, but it's very difficult in practice.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Altium On Track podcast. My name is Zach Peterson, and I'm your host for today. And of course, we are here talking with some important people from the electronics industry. Today, we're talking with Mike Buto, president of the Printed Circuit Engineering Association, and Mark Creedon, executive director for membership at the Printed Circuit Engineering Association and technical director of education at Inselectro. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. I know you both very well. I'll try to refer to you each as either Mike B or Mike C so that folks don't get confused. But thank you very much to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you, Zach. It's good to be here.
Glad to be here. Yeah. Happy New Year to you.
Yes, Happy New Year to you both. I've known you both for a while, and we always get to interact with each other at conferences, PCB West, PCB East. And you guys being part of PCEA, I think that is now, the two outlets where PCEA is getting most visibility. And there's been a lot that's been happening with the PCEA over the last year or so. So I think I'd like to just kind of jump right in and let you guys introduce yourselves, introduce the PCEA, and maybe we can talk about some of the great things that have been happening with the organization as it pertains to the industry and some of the great things that have been happening with a recent acquisition of UP Media Group.
Sounds good.
MC, you want to go first since you're the big name in the room?
Well, thank you kindly. And Zach, it's a pleasure truly to be here. And it's also exciting to just kind of share what's been going on and what we see to be going on as we look forward. So I'm just excited to be here at the beginning of this year. But just with a quick recap of 2022, we're actually celebrating two full complete years. The PCEA Incorporated in January of 2020. And so this will be our third year. Our second year, 22, was just an exciting year. As you had alluded to, with the acquisition of the UP Media Group and all its assets, there was a significant amount of work to kind of make that happen. But the net result a year later is to say that, you know, the integration really has gone well, very smooth. There was a lot of work, I think, preparing for that before it happened, which did make it smooth in its first year. Again, there was a whole lot to do in 22 to make that happen. The nice thing, though, is, again, and we're going to talk about moving forward, it allows us to kind of, with more resources, meet some of the challenges that are in front of us. So that's pretty exciting. I mean, to just recap, if I may, in bringing UP Media Group's assets into PCEA, first and foremost is our reach into the industry. And again, Mike always could probably give you more accurate numbers than myself, but we're truly reaching hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people throughout the year with what they call an industry, you know, a some sort of touch. And so that includes, you know, the assets of the magazines that they have, printed circuit board design and fabrication, and then also the Circuits Assembly magazine. The other thing we do is we have trade shows. And so we're going to talk a lot about PCB West, which is really the premier trade show for printed circuit engineering professionals. And we also have the Printed Circuit University and online learning platforms. There's quite a bit that goes into that. And I think, again, hopefully we can talk about that when we hit education. Other ways of reaching people, we've got the PCB Today, which is a workshop series where a bunch of, you know, industry subject matter experts come and share their insight And it truly becomes an educational platform that's kind of unrivaled in the industry. So along with that, we like this, we do podcasts and again, trying to just improve the industry. So, you know, that being said, I'm going to applaud what you're doing here, Zach, through Altium's podcast series, because I love the guests you bring on and I call myself grateful to being asked to participate. So.
Well, of course. I mean, we're happy to have you. And, you know, you had mentioned PCB West as the premier show for printed circuit engineering professionals, and I would definitely agree. But this last year, we actually had a reboot of, I guess, its sister show on the East Coast, PCB East. You and I were there, and we actually chatted briefly. And Mike, we also, or Mike B, I should say, we also chatted briefly. Tell us about that reboot. How did that come about? What was, how long of a pause was it? And then what would you, how would you gauge the success of that, of that show?
Right. So let me answer that. But let me, if I may, just add to one thing that Mike Creedon was mentioning. For folks who don't know, because we are a new organization, right? You know, just coming into our third full year. PCEA, it's an international network of engineers, designers, fabricators, assemblers. I don't want to forget them. Really anyone who is involved in printed circuit development. And we promote printed circuit engineering as a profession. We're looking at trying to take information, you know, new design concepts, get them down into the manufacturing side, and then also to communicate those manufacturing constraints and make sure that they are communicated back to the design side. And so, you know, it's, it sounds simple, obviously, in theory, but it's very difficult in practice. So we think of ourselves really as a bottom-up organization. You know, we're focused on the individual as opposed to the business entity. And, you know, we'd like to help that individual in no matter what part of the circuit engineering profession they're in, you know, really kind of get to the best, be the best person they can be in terms of career development, technical knowledge, and then hopefully mentorship, you know, where they can give back. So with that sort of framework in mind, PCB East and PCB West, as you mentioned, are both very important to what we do, right? Because that's really face-to-face training of engineers. And PCB East really filled a void that had been here in New England, which is where I'm based, for over 10 years. It was the largest technical conference, really, really the only technical conference of its size in New England in over a decade that was aimed at printed circuit engineering. We sold out the show floor, which was great. We had a very successful technical conference. I mean, a highlight was, you know, Gene Weiner's presentation, his keynote, you know, looking at emerging technologies. And, you know, that's really one of the things that we're trying to do at PCEA is understand what is coming and then how to implement it, you know, from design to fabrication to assembly. So that event was long overdue and very well received.
Yeah, that's great to hear that it went so well. I mean, when I was there on the floor, it was a lot of activity. It's not the biggest space, which I think was, you know, safe for for the event itself, having, you know, come back after a bit of a hiatus. But it was great to see that there were so many people there at all of the different sessions. And then of course, all the different companies there that were exhibiting. And I really like those shows because you get to see a lot of things that you read about maybe in news articles or that you read about in like application notes. You get to actually see it up close and personal.
Right. So Boston is the second highest area in the US in terms of venture capital, very big in medical, wearables, some defense work is still here. You know, we don't have all the fabrication and the EMS side, you know, there's lots of smaller EMS companies. It's nothing like California, of course, but there are a boatload of OEMs. And, you know, some of them are brand names, you know, Bose, EMC, companies like that. But there are lots and lots and lots of mid-size and startup companies in the IoT space. And you know, there's so much engineering talent that comes out of the colleges here. that it's really a mecca for this. And, you know, our conferences, what makes them different than what you'll see at a lot of other industry shows is that, you know, we don't focus on the 20-minute, you know, paper sessions. You know, the median length of a session is 2 hours. So that means, you know, some very in-depth technical training that's taking place. And, you know, you'll see as many 7-hour sessions as you'll see 1-hour sessions at a PCB East or PCB West. So we really focus on in-depth information that someone could take with them and apply to their jobs almost in real time.
So I'd like to dive a little bit deeper into that, because if you look online, I think you'll see a lot of different possible types of design education, right? There's tool-specific education, which is usually offered by the CAD vendors. Then there may be like tool-agnostic education at different levels of advancement. So I'm wondering, where do the educational initiatives that are being spearheaded by PCEA, where do those sit kind of in the hierarchy of design and manufacturing education? And do you see them being focused more on, you know, design, CAD tool use generally, or towards manufacturing? Or do you guys really just try and hit everything? Or are you maybe more pulled by what attendees want? How do you prioritize? Right.
So it's a great question, okay, because it's something that we wrestle with in every single, you know, leading up to every single conference. You know, what is it exactly do we want to do? Are we going to center this around a particular technology, or are we going to make this as broad as possible to try to bring in, you know, the greatest appeal to the greatest audience? And, you know, it's, I don't think that there's a formula. I think sometimes that there's a technology that kind of demands some, you know, some attention. So IoT kind of popped on the radar a few years ago, and, you know, we have had some speakers that have developed content specifically to, you know, those types of boards so that we're addressing a specific need. But that, what that also does though, Zach, is it gets the attention of folks that are working in that space. You know, I'll let MC talk to this in a little bit more detail, but, you know, Mike, who is intimately familiar with not just design, but also, you know, the material science and signal integrity and issues like that, can speak to, you know, how similar some of these issues are, regardless of what the end product application is. So, Mike, do you want to kind of latch on to that?
Yeah. So, thank you. when you consider education, Zach, there's content and then there's delivery. Okay, and you broke it down really nice, you know, saying that it could be tool specific and tool agnostic, and then what discipline and or then what sector is it taken in? We've named our organization very strategically, Printed Circuit Engineering, meaning engineering occurs at the assembly house, engineering occurs at the fabrication level, engineering occurs at the schematic level, and engineering occurs at the layout level. Okay, now I also, you could throw in test and many ancillary things. When you consider the amount of fabricators, you know, what is it, approximately 183, pick a number, across the land, they have engineering challenges, same thing with assembly houses, but there are hundreds of thousands of engineers throughout the OEM sector. So it's trying to, you know, match content with delivery to the people that need it. It is a little bit more volume driven by the OEMs. So we target that. Yet at the same time, fabricators and assemblers are very interested in what we have to say, because who we're trying to educate are their customers. So they do pay attention and they show up at these sessions. And again, so, you know, we started out talking about technical conferences, which is a great time for the individual to get out there and partake of this, which has great excitement as opposed to online medium. Online is good, but it lacks some retention and it lacks, you know, something in the delivery. We're all very grateful for it. I mean, the pandemic taught us that. But, you know, in-person learning, you retain more. And so we're attempting to be as diverse as we can and adaptive to the needs that we see in front of us. And people are always trying to learn what's emerging. They want to stay ahead of the curve technically. And because the challenges are hitting everybody. The technology curve is truly in the ramp up level, much more so when it was like this. It is truly very steep, the technology curve. So hopefully that provides some of that insight. So thanks for letting me share.
Yeah. And yeah, and Mike, if I could.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. If I could just add, you know, one thing, you know, MC is completely correct insofar as the online versus in-person types of events. There's obvious value in terms of being able to sit down in a session for, you know, 3 or 5 or 7 hours with a Rick Hartley or a Susie Webb or a Mike Creedon or, you know, a Zach Peterson and, you know, get expert in opinion, you know, about a particular issue, right? But then there's also what happens after that, you know, the what I call the lobby caucuses, you know, where, you know, the networking takes place that goes beyond that, so that you start getting business cards and names and LinkedIn connections and the questions that you have that arise down the road can get answered very quickly. And, you know, it's, you know, yeah, sure, somebody could reach out to you, Zach, or to Mike on LinkedIn and pose a question, but, you know, you don't necessarily know where they're coming from and you know, what their story is and all that. And email is not always a good substitute for just this type of rapport. The other thing I'd like to add, you know, again, kind of segging on to what MC said, is that the fabricators and assemblers, when we're looking at a conference, you know, we always get a lot of design engineering abstracts, but we look at it and we say, okay, what is in here for the fabricator and assembler? Because when those folks come to our events, what you hear from them most often is that DFM is not how they think. It's really more MFD. It's like manufacturing for design or manufacturing, you know, they're trying to figure out what the design constraints are, you know, so it's manufacturing by design, like MBD, right? So, you know, the enlightened assemblers really understand just how complex the design side of the equation is. You know, there's value for everybody when you get down to it. And we really try to make sure that there are manufacturing related sessions at our conferences so that those folks on the manufacturing side of the equation understand, you know, that they need to be in this room too, that they need to be at this conference as well.
You know, Zach, I agree with you. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I would like to piggyback one final thing on that thought. And normally Mike and I would send this in our, say this in our opening sentence is we have a mission statement. And essentially that is collaborate, educate, and inspire. And it's truly at the heart of what we do. When Mike said we were a bottom-up organization, collaboration needs to come first. And that's going to happen live and it's going to happen online. So we're not trying to pit live versus online. We're trying to facilitate both. We live, you know, in this, the post-pandemic world has made us, so many of us, remote workers. So there's nobody in the next cube other than my beagle over there. And what we have is one another through online relationships. And a lot of times those relationships are formed in the live events, okay? And it's with those that that collaboration then, you know, transcends into education. Okay, where we're truly trying to, on the job, educate one another, enlighten one another, share technology, wisdom, or advancements. And from that, we all walk away a bit inspired. So that's truly what we're trying to do when we say we're a bottom up. And that's why our membership is free. But back to you, Zach. Thanks for letting me cut in.
Yeah, of course. I agree with you, Mike B, about the manufacturing side of it. And I've said several times on the podcast to other guests that learning more about manufacturing in terms of the process and the operational side and quality and reliability and all of those kind of, you know, granular things, I made it my mission over the last year to learn much more than I already knew. And it was really enlightening because in talking to people, you get to see how they have a bit of a different perspective in how they approach complex technologies and how they fabricate it. And it was something that I could only get by actually speaking with someone. Now, you know, usually I'm doing it over, you know, over a podcast, but you're absolutely right. It's that actual dialogue that you can have with somebody, even if it's mediated by the internet, where you can really get somebody's perspective and get answers to tough questions that are really difficult to find from Google searches.
Right. So, you know, to your point, you know, we've had situations where, you know, like Jerry Partita from Summit Interconnect will talk about how folks are kind of over designing, you know, certain boards. You know, they're going smaller than they need to be, and, you know, with the lines and spaces, and you know, Lee Ritchie will come on and chime in and agree, you know. And I mean, you've got two of the leading, you know, fabricator and design engineering folks in the industry, you know, talking about, hey, look, you know, you can make boards that are fundamentally, you know, simpler, and yet, you know, get, you know, they do all the functionality that you need, and they're much more manufacturable. You know, we don't expect everybody to walk through a manufacturing plant and become experts in, you know, imaging and how solder mask is applied and things like that. But if you know some of the basics of the physics of the board, right. And this is where folks like Mike really, you know, I think earn their keep, then you're going to be a better design engineer. You're going to make the fabricator's life easier, and everything is going to flow that much better.
So if I can piggyback with that too, one of the things that we've tried to put at the core of what we do in PCEA is what, you know, Steph Chavez, our chairman, actually coined the phrase, the designer's triangle. And we actually, I serve in the IPC standards committee. We actually put this in the 2200 series in the first page, first paragraph. And that's the designer's triangle, where there's three perspectives to truly make a circuit work. And a lot of times you'll pull on one expert in manufacturing. Well, that's one perspective. Another time you might pull on another expert in signal integrity or performance. Another time you might pull on someone with great expertise in the solvability, you know, using your CAD tool, truly solving a dense, high-speed digital or RF puzzle. And each one of those is radically important, but it's the hybrid of all three at the same time that truly what makes Revision One work. And so we really try to stress that. And when we, as Mike B. Alluded to, when we have conferences, we have an educational committee that pools all the different papers that come together, and we truly try to bring a balance of those three perspectives, and so that we're addressing people who, you know, lack that information. You know, I'm a great designer and I know signal integrity, but I don't understand reliability or manufacturability. Well, come and hear that presentation. Or if you're a manufacturer and you don't really understand what are the challenges that signal integrity people face, you can balance that out. So,
MC, thanks for bringing that up, because I want to underscore that. PCEA is not a staff-driven organization. It really is a volunteer-driven organization. And so, you know, our education committee, which is really the foundation of the entire rest of the organization's initiatives, you know, is led by Thomas Chester. We have the conferences task group, which is led by Rick Hartley. We have the accessible and free education material task group, which is led by, you know, John Watson of Altium. So, you have folks that are, you know, giving their time on a volunteer basis because they see this as really critically important. And, you know, we take our cues as a staff from them. It's not the staff, you know, generating things for the membership to do. It's the other way around. The staff is there to kind of, you know, carry the burden, the administrative burden, so that the industry can talk to each other and train each other.
Yeah, you brought up an important point, which is that it's this is a way for people to essentially take some of that knowledge they've earned over time and give back. And you didn't say it explicitly, but I think that's one of the things that's really going on with the membership. And I actually posted on LinkedIn recently, because I recently joined an IEEE standards group, and I posted on LinkedIn that I think if you are someone who has earned some level of, technical knowledge over time, that it's your responsibility to participate in these kinds of things, whether it's a standards group, whether it's an organization like PCEA, there are actually multiples of these out there, to ensure that you're giving that knowledge back to people who need it.
I highly concur with that. So as serving as an executive board member in PCEA, I also serve as a committee chairperson at IPC. In the next couple of weeks from now, I will be in San Diego at the IPC Expo. And we're really excited because we're pulling together the 22-21 and the 22-22 design series. It's been 12 years that those documents and those standards are in rewrite. And so we're finally bringing them to a new edition, which is exciting for the industry. We design to those and we manufacture to those. And they're more than just guidelines. They're truly standards whereby actually they're legal requirements. They're binding requirements. People a lot of times don't get that, but it improves reliability of our products and the integrity, the manufacturability, which again affects the bottom line. So when companies send their people to these technical conferences and they follow the standards that we as volunteers and individuals contribute, we're helping companies bottom line. Because truly, if I do not have to build Rev 2 or Rev 3 and Rev 1 will pass data and work, that's a win on the calendar. It's a win on the overall development costs, and it can be a significant win in ongoing revenues through high quality, reliable products.
And Zach, to your point, at PCB West last fall, one of the sessions, in fact, maybe the best session, was a panel discussion under the fundamental question, where is the design engineering profession going? And so we had as panelists Jennifer Wasco who's an engineering director at Collins. We had Jonah Stevenson, who's a hardware engineering lead at Google. Mike Creedon was on there. He has a training organization called PCEDU. And Steph Chavez was representing PCEA. And we talked about, and we had Gary Ferrari, who was representing the EPTAC, which was, does the IPC CID training. But one of the things that came out was Jen pointed to how she's working, not just with local technical, like vocational schools, but she's going down into the grade school level to try to get people excited about engineering and just explaining mm-hmm. to them, hey, look, you've got your iPhones and your AirPods and things like that. And, did you ever think about how these were designed and made? And trying to get them interested in the idea of electronics engineering and manufacturing. And one other really interesting observation she made was how she's seen how video game players, people that are hardcore gamers, seem to have the right kind of, I'll say brain, okay, for lack of a better word, for circuit board design. She's like, they think in 3D. If you've been playing Minecraft for a few years, you can walk right into an electronics engineering job. It's a really interesting idea. And I mean, we're going to need that kind of, I think, future thinking, right? Long range thinking in terms of how to keep building this industry, because as you see the amount of investment that companies are making today in North America and, subsidized in part by, the US government, who said, hey, look, this is a really critical field. We need this. This is part of our, our defense strategy, is to have a, homegrown, full electronic supply chain. Then folks like Jen are going to be, in the way that they see the world are going to be so, so important, especially the fact that they're willing to share that with the next generation. And we like to think, hey, look, PCA offers the platform for folks to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I often wonder, what can we do to get kids to really understand that, like, this is the future. Tech is not just software. Tech or software, as we understand, wouldn't even be enabled if it wasn't for folks, I guess, like ourselves, who build all the hardware for it to run on. So that's a very interesting insight that she found, that folks who are into games like Minecraft are probably going to be some great designers in the future. So I've been asking some younger folks who were recent guests on the podcast, you know, what got you into electronics and how did you end up here? And it's always a diverse set of answers. So, you know, I'm hopeful that we can figure out some ways to get that younger generation involved, because, you know, the workforce crunch is not just in PCBs, as you know, you guys have identified, and as like IPC in a recent report also identified. But now I actually follow someone on LinkedIn named Robert Quinn, and he pointed out that the workforce crunch is also in semiconductors. So, I mean, it's at all levels throughout the industry where we're going to have this major workforce crunch. And, you know, I'm hopeful that the next generation of engineers is not all focused on software, that they actually come in and do hardware, and that hardware becomes the cool thing again.
So, you know, Lee Ritchie told me once that the reason why people make hardware is to run software. And he's like, and people are going to kill me for saying that. But he's right. Okay. He's fundamentally, he's right. However, I do think it's critical to understand there is a vacuum of knowledge about manufacturing today in the U.S. You know, the image is that the factory is this dark, noisy place that's subject to temperature extremes. And, you know, that just doesn't ring true with me. You know, these are climate controlled, clean, automated production areas. That's what you see when you walk into a factory in North America today. So
yeah, there's almost this image that it's like, you know, the 1800s in England during the Industrial Revolution, like that's what a factory is.
Right. And I think that another thing that folks have to understand is that, you know, there's plenty of opportunity for on the job training. There's pay for skills, there's job enlargement and enrichment. There's flexible work weeks. That's not always well known, you know, to those who are looking at service sector types of careers. I think this is an educated sell. It's a long range type of approach. Because face it, staffing always been an issue in the electronics industry. You know, even in the recession in 2008, 2009, all I heard from folks was we can't find anybody. So, you know, it's something that really requires, I think, you know, Mike referred to the design triangle earlier. It requires sort of a triangle of industry and government and academia to solve this problem. But first, you have to acknowledge there is a problem before you can solve it. I feel like we're inching toward that right now, which is good.
I know there's when you speak of the labor shortage that's out there, engineering layout has always been an on the job type of field where, you know, a degree is not required. And many people, you know, came in through an apprenticeship type model, and industry has somewhat ignored the layout profession. I've been preaching this for a long time, but when you consider the needs, if I have 180 fabricators out there and each one supports hundreds of OEMs, the amount of OEM jobs for layout engineering is significant. And layout is not being taught in university level. I've literally reached out to about 30 of them across the country, and they have no expertise to teach it. Even when offered a curriculum, they say, well, we don't have anybody that could actually administer it. We've offered it for free. And I know Altium, I've worked with Altium trying to, you know, literally we'll put Altium seats in your colleges. And, you know, there's inroads of success there. And Mike had alluded to, you know, John Watson doing that even at the junior college level. All that to say is this vacuum is out there, and academia is, in my opinion, and I'm throwing the gauntlet down here, is not doing their part. Therefore, we in industry need to. And there's a lot of initiatives, you know, the House Bill 7677 and, you know, the National Defense, Acts and stuff like that, that's attempting this. But again, often these are driven by the fabricators, 180 of those, as opposed to trying to solve the layout thing. I mean, over 15,000 BSWEs graduate each year, and none of them show up with layout expertise. And so when we can bring them this expertise and add this to their suite of professional tools, we've truly enabled them to succeed. So That's one of the reasons I want to passionately serve in this organization.
And we talk a lot about problems, right? And you know, but the important thing is, what are our solutions? What are our paths forward? You know, when you have the, you know, the electronic design automation industry growing in terms of employment at you know, something like 8%, you know, over the last couple of years, I mean, it's, that's a really big number. You know, those are the number of new hires in that sector. So the, you know, you need to keep feeding that. And the solutions, I think, you know, Mike is right in that academia has not been, you know, involved in this, you know, with both feet, or even, you know, maybe even a pinky toe. However, you know, I'm seeing little hints of this. You know, Rochester Institute of Technology is now in its third semester with a design engineering program, or at least, you know, some seminars and coursework. You know, Stanford started a printed circuit design class, you know, last semester, and we had 30 something Stanford undergrads come to, you know, they joined the whatever 2000 something folks that registered for PCB West last fall. So we had, you know, a bunch of students, you know, walking the show floor, which, you know, 10 years ago would have been an anthema, but now everybody's realized, hey, look, this is the next generation. We need to get these people involved. We need to talk to them. We need to let them know what this industry is all about. You know, Mike mentioned John Watson, who's, you know, doing things down in Southern California. And, you know, you have Lorain Community College in Ohio that has a full-fledged SMT line and trains folks to be SMT operators. So you have little hints of this. But, you know, again, to Mike's point, I mean, one of my neighbors is the president of a New England community college. And I brought up what Lorain is doing to him. And he said, yeah, no. You know, that's a cyclical industry, you know, and I'm thinking to myself like, all right. So you have four cars in your driveway and every one of them has probably at least $3,000 worth of electronics in it. You know, that doesn't feel very cyclical to me. That feels like, you know, a pretty busy, healthy industry, but they have to see the economics behind it. Right. And that's where the OEMs really matter. You know, the OEMs need to not only identify the need, but they need to be part of the solution. They need to start participating, I think, at the, not just the college, but at the lower levels, sending their engineers in to talk to students and just get them to understand that, you know, that life, there is life in engineering beyond coding for, you know, one of the social media companies.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think what you just highlighted is something very important, which is the massive disconnect between the knowledge that the OEMs have about what it is they build and the everyday person. Because I feel like there's still this huge perception that printed circuit boards are basically just an overblown way to wire computer chips together. And the real, you know, technology is the semiconductor. And the government in the US, at least, has not done anything to push back against that, because if you look at the CHIPS Act, it's only chips. Like, we're fighting to even get some of that allocated to packaging, which is basically just a more advanced circuit board. But even that's a struggle. And so if that's a struggle, how do you think you're going to get, you know, the typical community college president to understand that nothing they enjoy in modern life would be enabled without printed circuit boards?
Go ahead, MC.
Thank you. I think it was Mike Kelly of Isola said, "Well, chips don't float."
Travis Kelly. Travis. Yeah,
Thank you very much.
We're going to be having him on again soon to talk about some of these developments.
Apologize, I got his name incorrect. I think that it is a 3D solution. And, you know, you're seeing that with interposers, and which were 96% of that is all done offshore. And there's a lot of inroads of that starting to be being built on our shore. So there is movement for that. But the whole industry's, you know, technology ramp up towards micro development is it's coming on us real fast. And we're used to a slower ramp up. The ramp up we're on now is very accelerated.
So this gets into to some issues with design education around packaging. And I wonder if focusing on packaging is kind of a backdoor way to get engineers to also focus on printed circuit boards, because I've talked to multiple people on the podcast and, you know, off the podcast about packaging and, you know, substrates and interposers. And at a basic level, if you really want to, you know, boil it down, they all say that, well, yeah, it's essentially just a very, you know, fine line, fine spacing printed circuit board. It's a more advanced version. So printed circuit designers kind of have an inroad to a new thing that they can design because they already have the skills. They have the solvability and routing skills. They know how to think about it in 3D. And so they could certainly get into packaging. So I'm wondering if a focus on packaging at the educational level and the academic level is another way to get people to focus on printed circuit boards, because they're going to have to learn those same skills.
You're absolutely right with that, Zach. So here's a shameless plug. Come visit the Inselectro booth at Apex, because we'll be speaking about that. The idea of packaging, most people understand that if you looked at a BGA, it is a small circuit board, but it's built with some materials that are not common materials. You know, when you have a 25 micron or dielectric thickness, you know, a one mil dielectric thickness, that's not a standard off-the-shelf material. The whole idea of MSAP, ASAP, the semi-additive, micro traces solving micro BGAs, et cetera. This is packaging it at a next level. And it is my opinion and my theory that packaging at some point needs to come onto the bare board itself. So the bare board itself needs to evolve. I'm going to be speaking about that whole construct that we do MSAP and ASAP today, yes, on package designs. We even do it with what I call the exception rule. I know Eric Bogatin actually wrote a paper that when you have, you know, a 4 mil line and you need to pin escape with a 1 or a 2 mil line, but for a small distance, that is an impedance discontinuity that, yes, it produces a signal integrity reflection of sorts, but it's manageable. It's in that, you know, 1/4 or 1/6 of really the rise time distance, talking technical here, but it's manageable. But we're not building that 2 mil line across the entire board at 50 mils. And I put to you that we're really trying to push in and get some involvement from the manufacturers to truly find out what the smallest buildable MSAP line, trace line can be using standard materials today. Because this will take our industry, it's my opinion, from essentially the 100 micron, the 4 mil trace width, down to 50% of that, to a 2 mil trace width, using off-the-shelf materials. And that will enable truly trying to bring some of that package scale development truly into today's circuit boards. And this will be upon our doorstep a lot sooner than people think. And so I love the fact that the industry is starting to look at some of this. It's truly, you know, next gen for what we're doing. And it's exciting times.
Yeah, totally agree. And that's another area where over the past year or so, I've realized I need to get much more familiar with MSAP and ASAP. And so hopefully Tara Dunn will get on here and discuss some of that with us, because I think this is something that a lot of folks still find to be esoteric. And as you say, it's coming up quick. And I'm wondering, how long is it going to be before that becomes the new standard processing?
Well, Tara's our vice chairman, and Nay Vardia, who is one of the licensees of ASAP, is also on our board. He's American Standard Circuits, so they probably would be good people to have on and address that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Zach, one topic, you know, and this is fun, because I think all of us, the three of us, could continue on for probably more than the segment would hold. But one topic I don't want us to pass on is some of the direction for this upcoming year. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've with everything that's kind of gone behind us now, we're on a much more secure footing to really reach out into this upcoming year. And our focus in this upcoming year is membership. More than that, I'm going to say the value of involvement. Now that, to from our vantage point, and we have these strategic planning meetings that are going on, whereby we're truly, we view this from, yes, an OEM perspective. We view this from a manufacturing perspective. But again, as Mike said, we're a bottom up. We truly want to have this at an individual perspective where your participation, our membership is free. I keep stressing that. Literally go register at PCEA.net. And we're building up users groups, okay, our chapters, as we call them, and they're international now. We've actually got chapters going in Europe, in Mexico, in Canada, and Australia, and across the United States. And so we're meeting quarterly with the leadership of those to try to pass the vision on. And we're seeing that the Zoom remote platform, or whatever we want to call this, the remote platform, is really helpful because it's reaching people that are remote and never could come to the events that used to happen, you know, regionally or locally, because they could drive there. And so we're really excited about this new reach that we're having across the land. And MB, you want to share anything on that?
Right. So you can go to, as Mike said, to PCEA.net and, you know, sign up not just as a member, but also, you know, if you want to be involved as a mentor or a mentee. And in fact, I think, what is it? You know, two of our board members, Mike, our current board members, you know, we found as they originally were mentees.
Correct.
And
yeah.
Now one of them's a regular speaker at our conferences and doing training for Altium. And so, I mean, it's just, you know, it doesn't take much to get involved, and they're already seeing the benefits of it. You know, one of our strategic goals, right, because this year we did our first strategic plan, and one of our strategic goals is an accessible education at a price point affordable to anyone. And, you know, so, and we mean that, right? So, you know, we want to be able to offer all sorts of in-depth technical presentations, you know, whether they be white papers or recorded webinars, you know, through our printed circuit university platform, and it's free to PCEA members. We want to enable that access to technical expertise. You know, we want to help our constituents find colleagues and vendors and technologies. And, you know, for that matter, we want to help vendors find customers, you know, the lead generation part, because we do have corporate members as well now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those are really our four strategic goals. And, you know, the focus this year really is on that membership. The integration is in the rearview mirror, and we can start building back the chapters and getting through our message that, you know, this is about, you know, networking, you know, sharing of technical knowledge, helping each other grow in their careers.
Yeah. The mentorship program has really been exciting. We've had examples where someone will show up and say, I'm in this particular, it was a marine electronics up in the Northwest, actually in Vancouver area. And that person was mentored for better part of a year. And at some point, mentoring fulfills its accomplishment and you've invested in a person. Well, then a year later, another person showed up in the Northwest. It was in Seattle area and said, I'm also in marine electronics. I said, well, I want you to call this person here. And literally, so now we have what's called third generation mentoring occurring. So in this day and age of remote operation, my beagle doesn't know electronics that well, but people that I meet throughout this industry can mentor one another, and that's an incredible thing. And it's just really participation and involving yourself.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think the mentorship is always great. Sometimes it's just nice to have access to a person where you can just get a straight answer from somebody rather than spending hours searching the internet.
Right.
Well, guys, we're getting towards the end of our time slot for this, but I want to thank you both so much for joining me today. It's always great to hear about what's going on with PCEA, and I think the organization is so important, especially in terms of its mission of educating the next generation of designers.
Nice.
Thank you, Zach, for the opportunity. It means a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, we'll have you on again, I'm sure, in the future. To everyone out there listening, we've been talking with Mike Buteau, president of PCEA, and Mike Creedon, executive director of membership at PCEA, also technical director of design education at Inselectro. To everyone out there listening, make sure to subscribe. You'll be able to keep up to date on all episodes and our tutorials as they come out. And of course, don't stop learning, stay on track, and we'll see you next time.